This is Kurt Anderson, and I'm talking to a guy who calls himself Mr. Media, but he won't tell me his first name.
Yeah, Mr. Media, I'll talk to writer Marcy Miller. She's the author of a new sex and dating book for women over 40 titled Rebooting in Beverly Hills. Stick around. This is definitely one of those only in Hollywood stories. This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview, brought to you today by the Stitcher app for mobile devices. Give it a test drive today at stitcher.com/mrmedia, Mr. Media. I love this free radio app, and I think you will too. stitcher.com/mrmedia. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of newly divorced women who don't know what hit them, but know exactly where to hit back, in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Attention, men. Do not, I repeat, do not marry Marcy Miller. It's not that she isn't likely a lovely woman, a great mother, a sparkling conversationalist, a talented legal mind, a great jewelry designer, or even great in the sack. It's just that when she recalls the events of your life together that went sour, she remembers everything. And as a talented storyteller, that is not going to be in your favor, my friends. As the author of Rebooting in Beverly Hills, Miller tells stories of marital bliss and extramarital cheating that will curl even your short and curlies. Her delivery is so smart and colorful that you'll feel like a fly on the wall in the most intimate of circumstances. And her sense of a man's dishonor will have you squirming even if you've never thought of cheating on your spouse. The knives are that sharp in her drawers. Women, on the other hand, will probably eat this stuff up and worship at Marcy Miller's keyboard. So be prepared for talk of sex quotas, J-date, middle-aged one-nighters, and mysterious receipts from Bergdorf Goodman. Marcy Miller, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you. I love the introduction.
Thank you. I'm glad. You never know when someone's going to just hang up in the middle of it. So my head was spinning as I read about your cheating second husband. And of course, I couldn't stop reading, and I had to know all the details.
Good.
Yeah. Is that a pretty common response? I mean,
it is. The book starts out in a very calm way, and then as it unfolds, I think it's more and more interesting and entertaining.
Have any of your friends who've read it said, "I didn't want to know this much about you," or "this is, I don't know, it made me uncomfortable because I know you," or any of that kind of stuff?
You know, actually, it's been kind of the opposite. They say that they feel closer to me because there were things that they didn't know about me, especially the past stories about the breast cancer survival and the law stories, which I don't really go around telling. So it really has been the opposite.
You know, with there's the stories of your second husband and the cheating and how you discovered it, and that's all. I mean, it's fascinating and it's a little lascivious, and you know, we got to read it. But the thing that really cut to the quick for me was at one point you talk about an email that I guess one of your girlfriends sent out about your situation, about your personal life, and sent it out to a whole bunch of other women, some women you didn't know, and of course those things get spread around. To me, that was almost a worse betrayal than what the husband did.
It really was. It was like a sucker punch because these were the women that I needed around me, the estrogen fix of your girlfriends when you're really feeling low. And then by mistake, I was on that email string. That's how I found out about it.
That's awful.
So I turn on my computer and there is stories about me going out into the world in one of my most vulnerable times. And it was really, really devastating.
Did you ever deal one-on-one with the person who sent it?
No, you know, I didn't. I just, I felt I believe in karma, and she's going to have to live with that one.
So was it done? We'll get off this in a second, but I mean, this really struck me. Was it done maliciously? Did she think she was helping you?
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I think it was just gossip.
Ah.
You know, I say gossip is a dreaded disease, and it is. If you're a gossip, this was really exciting and fodder, and here the seemingly perfect couple is coming undone through cheating. And I think there was a certain amount of joy taken in spreading it, which makes it much worse.
Gossip's a funny thing. My brother, who never gossips about anyone, it's just not his thing, called me earlier today to tell me that his next-door neighbor, who has always been kind of a pill, who would complain if the lawn man, they've got wooded area behind them, if instead of throwing the grass clippings in the trash, dump them in the woods, or if something was askew at my brother's house, or if he came over, on the rare occasion that the neighbor came over, he would complain that their house wasn't neat enough. And, you know, he gave this impression of himself. Well, my brother just found out that the guy was foreclosed on his house.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, I mean, it was like he was just shocked because he just thought this guy had created this world for himself. And, I mean, my brother's not going to send an email or gossip to anyone else, but, you know, gossip's a funny thing. I mean, talking about people, you just we can't really resist it, I guess, at times.
I do think part of it's human nature. I think in this particular situation went beyond that. I think that studies have shown that women bond through gossip. But this was not meant to be a nice bonding experience.
Right. Now I see that. So one of the things I need to ask you at the top here, and I went back and looked a second time, it didn't seem to me that I saw anything in the book about names being changed to protect the guilty. Are these real names I'm seeing?
No, not at all.
And
they are totally changed. And as a lawyer, I wasn't going to take any chances like that. But also, I don't see any reason to use real names. There's nothing good can come from that. But it's all true. Everything in the book is true.
Well, but see, and that's why I wondered. I figured, you know, with your legal background and 20 years of being a lawyer, I think I read, maybe more.
Yes, 20 years.
So, you know, if it's true, it's true, right? I mean,
right.
So,
but there's no reason. I didn't want to be the gossiper, the person who embarrasses other people. People know who they are, I'm sure, if they read the book, and my girlfriends can certainly identify. That's
all right.
All right.
To share so much of your personal life in a book, as opposed to, you know, like you said, we talk about, you talk to your girlfriends, that's one thing. But when you put it on paper, you sell it to anyone, it's everywhere. I mean, it can be anywhere. And why do it?
I think there's two reasons. First of all, I would go on these dates that were sometimes a little bit depressing, but often hilarious. And I would be driving home and I'd call my best girlfriend to tell her about it. And we would laugh so hard that I'd have to pull the car over. I would be in tears laughing. And she'd say, why don't you go home, write it up, email it to me, and you'll feel better about it, and it'll be fun for you. So after a while, I started to have an entertaining memoir on that end. On the other end, as a lawyer, I'm a really good researcher, and I could not find answers to a lot of my basic questions. As a person who's coming back into the dating world with Google and Tweet and internet dating, I couldn't find answers. So I felt like this was a chance for me to share some of the information that I had gathered in a self-help sort of way. So the book is a lot of funny and humorous, entertaining parts, but it also is peppered with self-help and interesting information, I hope.
As you were saying that, I was reminded of something my dad said to me. I've been a writer all my life, and at one point, and I think he was angry at me at the time. I'm having trouble putting it in context. But what he said was, nothing bad will ever happen to you because you'll just turn around and write about it.
It's
and
true.
I thought, yeah, you know.
It makes you feel better. And in fact, one of the reasons that the book is divided roughly into four sections, pickups, fix-ups, internet dating, and hiring a matchmaker. And one of the reasons I hired the matchmaker was also because I thought it would be interesting to my readers. It was the last part of the equation that I did. And so you're right. It's sort of, you do it because you want to get fixed up by a matchmaker, but also, you know, for the good of the book.
Professional research, I think.
Exactly. Right?
And one more question about the creation of the book. Was there any part of you that did this because there was a little payback, a little vengeance you could get off your plate?
No, I have to say that I had really healed and didn't feel that at all. It wasn't vengeance at all. It's really because it's funny. Everybody has dating stories. Some of these are fun, really funny, mm-hmm. and also the self-help part of it. So it all sort of came together as a memoir. It just gelled.
Are there still stories that you held back? I mean, is it possible that there's stuff you didn't tell us?
Oh, yes. There's lots of stuff for volume two.
I hate that. Yeah, okay. All right. So... the book is, aside from the stuff that at the beginning that's very entertaining about your private life that started you down this path, the book is meant to be about sex and dating for women 40 and up, 50. What is so different about dating in middle age as opposed to, you know, when you're just out of high school or college?
I think it's tremendously different. Hmm. Your goals are certainly different. You're not looking for someone to father children or those issues are already gone. The door's shut on that one. Number two, most of us were not dating when there was an internet. There weren't the issues of going to internet sites or tweeting or Googling how often should you respond to emails and how often should you tweet and how often should you Google before you go out on a date. And it's much more complex in that kind of in our new environment, although sometimes it does help you to gather the information ahead of time. So that's a whole new dimension. And also the pool of people is smaller. You know, when you're just starting out, you have your whole university or your whole high school or your whole, you know, there's a ton of eligible people in the pool. And it gets narrower and narrower as you get older. So it's a whole different environment out there. Hmm.
Did you do you ever set rules for yourself that I will not date a married man, for example, anything like that?
100%. Yeah. I would not only not date a married man, I wouldn't date someone who said he was separated. He had to be divorced.
Okay. All right. Just checking. So the book is, as you mentioned, it's split into four topics. I thought maybe we could talk a little bit about each of the topics. I think the first section, I'm going to cheat and look, but the first section is about pickups.
Yes.
Pickups are good. Are we talking you getting picked up, you picking someone up? Has any of that changed? I mean, you know.
I think that... you can be a little bit more brazen, perhaps, than a long time ago. It's hard for me to remember a long time ago, but the fun about pickups is, first of all, you need to get out there. You need to be seen and get out there and practice flirting, because many of us have gotten rusty at flirting. And that's another problem being a little bit older, especially if you've had a long-term marriage. You haven't been out there to date. So go to a sushi restaurant and sit at the counter and talk to people and, you know, go to a bar before you go to a movie, which you can do by yourself so easily, and start talking to people. Hmm. And I always say, look for the longest line at the post office or Starbucks. Get in line, talk to people. And I think my favorite tip in the whole book has to do with pickups, and that is you need three business cards. You need one that has your name and your email address that you give out if you meet somebody interesting. Mm-hmm. And that is a safe way of allowing him to get in touch with you. The second has all your information, your cell phone, everything on it. And that you'll give maybe to women that you meet, because you're always looking for interesting new women as well to meet. Mm-hmm. And the third is a phony card. And that is
Shame on you. Shame. You should.
It's very useful. If you're being hit on by somebody that doesn't interest you and that just won't take no for an answer, that's a very valuable piece of paper.
I like that, actually. I say I like that in an entertaining way. I've been married 25 years, been with the same woman for 30 years, it seems, I think. So I'm a long removed from the dating pool and have no interest and no intention of getting back to it. But I like hearing funny stuff like that. Yes, you just go ahead and print up a third card.
Now, exactly.
And how do you keep – okay, so let's say you're going
to – separate?
Yeah, you're going to go to that extreme. How do you keep them separate?
I did three different colors.
Very simple.
Not different color ink, different color cardstock, because it's dark in places, and you don't want to make a mistake.
So I'm going to guess that the phony card is probably the darkest card.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
You got it.
Yeah, I like this. I like this stuff. I don't know, maybe I should, you know, dump the wife and go out and date. That sounds like fun.
Dare. It's not fun. It's hard. It's hard work. It's drudgery sometimes.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, as a girl, you have to... You put on your makeup and you get your hair blown and you go through a million outfits till you find the perfect outfit. And then you go and you meet the guy and it took you longer to get dressed than the date.
And you know, it's funny. I had a fellow on the show a few months ago. I can't think of his first name. He wrote a book called 44 Horrible Dates. It was about gay dating. And it was fascinating to read in that and I didn't realize until I got into reading the book that he was gay and the stories were largely about dating other men. But it's the same. The problems and the issues are exactly the same. It was so funny.
And
sad,
it's also,
but funny.
It's the same with different ages. You know, it's this, the book I like to say is for women over 45 or 50, but it isn't really. My young friends have the same issues and they read the book and say, boy, We're there with you. So it does seem to span all age groups.
If I was ever going to let my teen daughter date, I would tell her to get three cards, but she's never going to date, so I'm not.
Oh, that's right. You're going to lock her in her room?
Absolutely. I'm just going to tell her she can't date. I think that'll be enough, don't you think?
Oh, of course. That's very effective.
Yeah. Anything you tell her not to do, you know it's the first thing she's going to do. So I will not do that. All right. So tell me about fix-ups. This would be having your friends make a connection, someone you work with, something like that.
Fix-ups are the home run, in my opinion. And, in fact, I'm married, and it was a fix-up. But we'll backtrack on that for a minute.
Okay.
Fix-ups are a blessing because hopefully your friends know you better than anybody else. They know who you might like and who you might not like, and the people that they are trying to fix you up with, they probably know very well. So it's already a pre-selected group. It's not like the internet where it's random people, and fix-ups generally are the nicest dates that you're going to have. And as I said, ultimately, I was fixed up by a girlfriend at a dinner party and ended up marrying him.
Hmm. Well, that vetting is certainly helpful. You're going to get better. You're going to get better vetting through a fix-up, through a friend or a family member, than you would, internet dating, that kind of thing.
Absolutely, and you hope that they aren't going to fix you up with an axe murderer, or, you know, it's going to be a reasonably safe and nice guy.
Gee, Bob seemed like such a nice guy. Who knew? Right? All right, so speaking of, I mentioned internet dating, you did J-Date, I think, right? So what are the pros and cons of internet dating?
Well, the pros are it opens the pool. Certainly, because there are people, you can put in the geographic area you want, you can put in the types of people you want to attract, and then go through them slowly but surely, and then try to make a connection, and then meet up with them in a very casual circumstance. So those are the pros. The cons are, you have no idea who you're meeting.
That might be cons.
Yeah, well, that's what happened. And there's really, you know, I'm Ivy League educated. I'm a lawyer. I've been around the block. there's really no way to protect yourself, because the man that I ended up going out with was charming and smart and delightful, and it was not a happy ending on that score. Mm.
Well.
Yeah, you know, but that's part of life. And what I say to women, I do a lot of book signings, and women come up afterwards and tell me their story, and I love that. Mm-hmm. But what I say to them is, this is your life. You've got to enjoy it, because the process is drudgery. Mm-hmm. So find something that you like about it. You've got to laugh. You've got to enjoy it. You have to say, well, at least I'm out and about, or I had a nice dinner, or I met a nice man who's not right for me. And if it's a nice man, pass him on to your girlfriends. Fix him up. And maybe they'll fix you up with somebody who isn't right for them. And, you know, make this into something that's pleasurable, because if not, it really does become a chore.
Hmm. I'm curious, with the internet dating, because you have the option of selecting the geographic area, and let's say for women in their 40s and 50s or 60s, whatever it might be, let's say that you're well-to-do, you have resources. You don't have to. You wouldn't have to just say, okay, just Beverly Hills. I mean, you could say California, or you could say SoCal or whatever, because, you know, you have the ability to go different places. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
You can say St. Petersburg if you want.
Don't do that. You're going to get me in trouble now.
But you could put the area. Mm-hmm. I was not interested in a long-distance relationship. Mm-hmm. I think maybe some women are. And it's just not something that I wanted to enter into. I already had done that in the past, and I just find them too difficult. And travel has gotten, you know, much more of a hassle. So my geographic area was much smaller than a lot of women. But I also think that that's one of the great things. You can start out smaller, and then in a couple months, if you want, you can expand it. You're not stuck with the first thing you write down.
Well, the first person you meet.
That's for sure. The one thing I do think is important is to not lie in your profile. And what I found is everybody lies. In my case, I'm 6 foot tall. And so many men lied about their height, which I don't understand, because if I'm going to meet them, I'm going to see what their height is. And so if they said they were 6 feet and they were 5'5", why bother? Why bother doing something like
that? It's that whole Tom Cruise, Katie Holmes thing all over again, right? I mean, he lied, and when he met her on the internet, he said, I'm 6 feet, just like you are.
That's not right. Not as for
5'4" if he's an inch.
That works.
Yeah.
So,
sorry.
I think you just have to be honest so that you don't waste your time or the other person's time. Hmm. But other than that, you can change a lot of your preferences, too.
Now, you mentioned the last of the four areas was matchmaking, and this was the one that you went to strictly for professional research. So tell folks what matchmaking, professional matchmaking, was like in your experience.
Well, I'm sure that they've seen in the back of magazines the matchmakers ads, and they always have really pretty women, and they're expensive. And I thought, this could be interesting, because they will have a different selection of men who don't want to be on the internet and want help in finding women. Mm-hmm. So I went to her. It was expensive. She charges double for men than for women. And if there's a marriage, there's a premium paid. So if she makes a match, she gets a premium. Mm-hmm. So I thought, okay, she's got an incentive here. In fact, I would say, looking back on it, my worst dates were from the matchmaker. Mm-hmm. Because what really happened was she would show the pictures of the women to the men, and if they were interested, she would make the match happen. And there wouldn't be a lot of background discussion. Oh. So you assume, as the woman, that he's already found out about you, and he likes the things you like, and the things you put in your internet profile. But in fact, there was very little of that.
So it was just based on appearance?
Exactly. Huh. It was based on appearance. And I did meet some interesting men, but I had some very terrible dates. I really did. And it was even more disappointing because I paid for them.
Yeah. That's got to smart a little bit.
It really does.
Yeah, that would be kind of tough. Now, so of the four, and maybe you said this, I apologize, which would be your most recommended route? Fix up, right?
100%. Okay. 100% fix up. And what I did was, I recommend this to women, I went to one of the most crowded places in Beverly Hills. In this case, it was the shoe department of Neiman Marcus. And I stood there pretending I was shopping, and I would strike up conversations with women and say, oh, and by the way, if you know anybody, I'm on the market. If I could fit that into the conversation and try to get out there to get fixed up. And in fact, I did get several fix-ups from them.
Did they understand that you were interested in men and not women, or did any of them think, oh, yeah, I'd like to?
That kind of never dawned on me, but I think I made it clear.
Okay, just checking. It's a modern age, right?
Yes, it is, and I forget about that sometimes. So yeah, you're right.
Just like we didn't have internet dating when we were, you know, in college, it was, you know, same-sex dating was not as visible and common as
absolutely
as it is now. So, despite all the guidance in the book, you've made the point, I think, in a couple ways that you're not suggesting the book just to women to find Mr. Right, so much as for them to, you know, go on a little discovery of themselves, find themselves a little bit, get more comfortable with themselves, understand what they're looking for. Or am I overstating this, or is this?
That's exactly right. It is not about finding Mr. Right. It's about being so comfortable and happy in your own skin, mm-hmm. and having healed from any of the drama that you went through, that you're then ready to find Mr. Right or the man of your dreams or however you want to call it. And I think until you get to that place, you're not going to meet that person. Hmm. I really think the energy just isn't out there if it's until you are so comfortable.
You know, a question just struck me. Before you got married for the first time, how long were you actually out in the dating pool? I mean, were you in a hurry? Did you marry the first time too young, do you think?
I wouldn't say I was in a hurry, but it was during the period where all girls got married fairly young. I had been in a number of weddings, it was, you know, the bridesmaid. And it was typical to get married in your early 20s. Now things have changed. When you look at the statistics, more and more women are in their early 30s and older. But back then, that was the thing to do.
So maybe a little sooner in retrospect, if you could go back and tell your younger self, you might say wait.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I don't know how people marry young because you grow apart. You grow differently in your 20s. You're still forming who you are and who you want to be. And that's so hard to do if you're married.
I don't think I would ever, you know, if something happened, I don't think I would ever marry a second time. But I can imagine it would be easier. I mean, I'm 30 years old. And I would imagine that it would be easier to get married in your mid-40s than in your 20s or 30s because you are who you're going to be. You know, you've been through a lot. I think you have a better sense of who you are, whether you're male or female. And whereas in your 20s, you're still rapidly developing. Your interests are changing. You know, who you are is kind of yet to be determined. And so you get married and you're like locking yourself in, although, you know, a lot of people aren't locked in that long anymore, but I don't know.
No, that's why they're not locked in that long, because what you say is, I think, exactly right. I do think as a man, you're in better shape when you're older because your pool goes into the 20s or the 30s. You know, there are plenty of younger women who are after an older guy.
Daddy so, complex.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I don't know what to say after that, except to change the subject. What did you learn about yourself in the process of writing the book?
I think I learned a lot. You learn a lot. You're a writer, too. And I think that the more you look at where you are and how you see your own evolution and the patterns that you see. And I really saw that it is important for me to stay open to the new and to try to break patterns. And that's one of the great things about writing a memoir. It all unfolds and you can actually have some perspective on your life. Hmm. They're profound things that you can see and learn.
Well, among the many things that you talk about that seem to define you in your own eyes, I think is, and you mentioned this earlier, is that you're a breast cancer survivor. it's we have a lot of women out there who have that experience now. First of all, I'm always impressed with someone who will write about that experience. But second, because this is a sex and dating book, I wondered, how did that experience color your approach to being out in the dating pool? You went through your breast cancer with your second husband. You were still married at the time. I have read, okay, I'm asking it a little rhetorically because I have read in the book how you went through this, but how, you know, well, psychologically it must have been tough.
Yes, and I think that that's another reason that I wrote this book, frankly, because I could not find another book that did mention it or discuss it. You worry about your mastectomy. I don't care how good your reconstruction is. Mm-hmm. You worry. And especially when the only person who's actually seen you is your husband, and now you're going with new men. Mm. And what I realized, first of all, is we all have things that we're hung up about our bodies and that we think maybe our thighs are too big or, you know, our tush is too big or our tummy or there's always, everybody has something. And this is no different than that. And I also found that nobody really cared. A man really never commented or cared because everybody was just happy to be having a nice time and in a loving situation. Mm-hmm. And it became a non-issue. But I had to get past that hurdle. Mm. And the first time, I have to admit, was I was very nervous about that. So, but I felt once I got past the first time, it was not a problem ever again.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And I'm sure other women will read that who, you know, if they're they haven't dealt with it or they have dealt with it and maybe they're fearing it. Maybe that's keeping them out of the dating pool. That might be reading that. It might be, you know, reassuring, I think.
I hope so. And I did have a woman come up to me at a signing who said that she, instead of having reconstruction, had tattoos done all over her chest and that they were very beautiful and that that was her way of expressing it. So I thought that was such a beautiful moment to hear that.
I think I'd have more trouble with that than the mastectomy scarf.
Yeah, I know.
that's just me. I would like to think that, you know, talking about hopefully men being more settled and experienced, that by the time you're in your 40s and you yourself have dealt with probably a lot of health issues and you've seen a lot, that you're going to be a little better at handling that than, I mean, if you had dated a 22-year-old boy, not a man, but a boy at 22, and, you know, you had disclose or expose that might have gone differently than dealing with a mature man.
I agree, and I think a lot of it was in my mind. It certainly wasn't in his. It was my hang up that I had to get over.
We just want to get women naked. We're not really, you know. I mean, you know, it's like,
as my friend said, you're the only naked woman in the room. So
that, you know what? That's exactly, you know, your enthusiasm. Well, anyway, enthusiasm can carry the day. Let's just leave it go at that. So, so Marcy, you're designing jewelry now. Can people find that online? Do they have to find where do the people find your work?
MarcyMillerJewelry.com. I have a beautiful website, and I work with pearls. They're my specialty in colored stones and gold, and I think very beautiful. I love jewelry. I'm sure most of the women you know love jewelry.
Well, it seems like you're doing pretty well for a second act.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. Well, folks, listen, you can find Rebooting in Beverly Hills by Marcy Miller in great bookstores everywhere, or you can order it right now at a great price at MrMedia.com by way of Amazon. And, Marcy, your website, your other website for the book is rebootinginbeverlyhills.com, right?
That's right.
And I think people can find you with that, typing that into Facebook as well. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, you know, the book, it's a fun read. You know, it's a little sad at times, but it's, you know, it's definitely, people who are interested in gossip will definitely enjoy it, and people who are interested in women who are interested in dating and sex past a certain age will enjoy it and find a lot to be entertained by and maybe get some good advice in there. And thank you so much for joining us,
Thank
Mr. Media,
you.
Today.
This was a delight. Thank you.
Thank you. See and hear almost 1,000 Mr. Media interviews by visiting our main site, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Or check out the more than 200 video interviews on the Mr. Media Radio site on YouTube. And I'd sure appreciate if you'd show some love for Mr. Media's advertisers, including Stitcher. Apple named Stitcher a top 5 news app of 2011. It's a free mobile app for your smartphone or tablet that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. You can listen whenever you want to more than 5,000 shows, get customized recommendations, and discover what your friends are listening to. My own list of Stitcher favorites is pretty eclectic. I start my day with an hour of MSNBC's Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski. Then it's the latest two-minute update from the Onion News Network. After that, I'll listen to WTF with Marc Maron, Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin, HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, and excerpts from E's Chelsea Lately and The Soup with Joel McHale. Also in regular rotation on my Stitcher playlist, The BS Report with ESPN's Bill Simmons, The TechCrunch Headlines, and The Don Geronimo Show. The latest episodes of each show, whether originating from broadcasts, cable TV, radio syndication, or podcasts, are continuously updated. Stitcher is a free app for your iPhone, iPad, Kindle, Fire, BlackBerry, Droid, and more. And show your support of Mr. Media by getting, did I mention it's free? The app at stitcher.com/Mr. Media. That's stitcher.com/MR Media. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. We're also supported by Audible. Check out Audible's 30-day trial membership and download the audiobook version of the book everyone's been talking about, 50 Shades of Grey by E.L. James. Sign up for your free trial today at audible.com/radio. Again, audibletrial.com/radio. And finally, if you need a disc jockey for a wedding, bar mitzvah, corporate event, or just a big old party, please consider calling 1-800-DIAL-DJS, the party authority for all your party entertainment needs. You can call 1-800-DIAL-DJS or go to their website, 1-800-DIAL-DJS.com, and tell them Mr. Media sent you. And thanks for listening.
Hello, I'm Tippi Hedren, and if I want to watch anything really scary or listen to anything really, really scary, I listen to Mr. Media.